what do real estate agents want when they join a team? Probably, you know, one of the things is they want more financial security than going out on their own will give them. So, right. You know, it is hard for most people to go from a stable W-2, even a stable 1099 to you right. eat what you kill and you're right. on an island. Now, luckily, it's all that I know. So I'm just dumb enough to not know any better.
Right.
And, you know, I just find a way to get through it. But that is right. hard. You know, a lot of people, that's what gets them. So they right. join for financial stability. Right. So people want to know, how are you going to help me get that? You know, and that's the reason, you know, they say they want leads. You know, even though we know that what they really want is compliant clients, they want training. And then what do clients want? Stability.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Growth Hacker Show. On today's episode, Charlie and I are going to have a little bit of a conversation where we're diving into some of the impacts of the NAR settlement and specifically how it might, how it will affect recruiting for real estate teams and what impacts it makes, what impacts it doesn't make, and those sorts of ideas. As a quick caveat to this, here's the reality. What we have right now is we have the realities of what the changes are and some potential attempts at trying to follow those threads through to the future and seeing what the impacts are. In terms of how clearly anybody knows this, I think there's still a lot to be figured out by the market and a lot to be figured out by what happens in reality, as opposed to having really clear, definite answers to a lot of this. But the good news is that I think ultimately where we come down on this is that there is clarity of what matters from the real estate team perspective. There's clarity of what kinds of things to be looking for, even if not the specific answers to all of them. So we'll dive into that. So Charlie, welcome back to the show. Exciting,
it's good to
exciting
be here.
Topic. We are back to Hawaiian shirts today. So you know today is going to be great. It is a bomb pop Hawaiian shirt kind of day.
Exactly. Lightning bolts, stars, and bomb pops. Apparently, this is a 4th of July Hawaiian shirt, but every day is Independence Day for me.
Indeed. I love it. Just a real quick context. I'm sure everybody's at least basically familiar, but just that we're setting the groundwork. What are some of the key details of this NAR settlement, just at a real high level? Because again, most people probably already aware, so we don't need to rehash it a ton.
I heard someone said the TLDR, too long, didn't read, is... One, you have to have a buyer rep agreement to be able to right. work with a buyer. And two, right. the buyer co-op commissions cannot be posted on the MLS. They can be on other websites, or you got to call the listing agent. That's really the two big things.
I think the other one is that sellers are not required anymore to offer a buy-side commission in order to list at the MLS, right? It makes sense if it can't be listed in the MLS. It makes sense that it's not a requirement, which means that it's effectively not required at all.
I don't know that was a requirement everywhere. I guess it was some places. I don't think that it was on mine. You had to put something in the field, but right. I don't know that it was a requirement.
Yeah, that's kind of what I heard too. Literally in some places, you could put as low as 1 cent if you wanted to, that there was technically a requirement to offer something, but you had full ability to offer whatever you wanted. But that's not even a requirement at all anymore. And then I think the other key thing that's important to note is that the time frame of this. A lot of people were thinking we're looking at potentially years before this gets figured out. And we're looking at a July 2024 is when this stuff goes into effect. So we're recording this right now, March of 2024. So we are April, May, June, about 3 months away from those rules going into effect. So that's a lot quicker than we're expecting.
You're right. I'm fascinated to see how it's going to work out. I've worked in unregulated industries. When I was right. in the tech world, web design, you had someone's cousin's uncle's brother willing to build a website for $20. And then one of my good friends, his website started at 35 grand. You know, I got paid from hourly up to, I think, you know, $60,000 for a website. And so that's normal. I've got a lot of friends in the coaching industry, you know, and one of my best friends, he charges, I don't know how much that is in American dollars, but, you know, 60,000 pounds to right. be coach for a year. Another one of my good friends, he's 100 grand a year. And then you got, you know, coaches and therapists charging $25 an hour. And right. So ever since I've gotten into real estate, I've always been like, look, if it happens that way, it's every other business in the world. You have to prove your value.
Exactly. And so that's ultimately where we are, is that there's going to be a bit of a shakeup of previously there were things that were part of the normal operating process of doing business, requirements that were handed from the top down. Really, at a technical level, the other way that I've seen this shift is the requirements that are put in place through the settlement, they're really easy to get around and have the same effect as what was before. So right. You can't list it in the MLS, but you could still offer the same types of commissions if you want to. You could still negotiate them. All of that still exists. The requirement to have a written agreement, great. It's another piece of paper to fill out. But that's not really a big regulatory requirement to have something in writing saying this is the service that I'm offering and what I'm providing. So that isn't like an onerous.
Right.
And then otherwise, on the other end of the spectrum, the things that were previously required and maybe a little bit more heavy-handed of a requirement, if that makes sense, no longer are, right? I think potentially this is entering a period where there's the net result is that there is less regulation than there was before. There's less restrictions. There's more freedom for people to transact and engage in the ways that they want to. And so right. Now we have the ramifications of that, of if it's been being propped up in a specific way through regulation, now what happens when that regulation isn't there and people are able to let the free market decide that? And what sort of impacts do you see? So let's answer this question in two ways. What sort of impacts do you potentially see on that in general? And then how does that impact teams specifically when it comes to recruiting agents? And honestly, if we really want to talk about this, recruiting is the lifeblood of a real estate team. So the same way that if I have a real estate business, conversations are the lifeblood of a real estate business. The equivalent to conversations in a real estate team is recruiting. You got to have opportunities of people who are looking to buy or sell in order to have a real estate business. And you have to have opportunities for agents in order to have a real estate team, because the team aspect right. requires that you're working with people who are doing real estate. So anyways, on that front, what impact does it make maybe in real estate in general? And then how does that relate, you know, to teams specifically looking to recruit?
One of the things I like to think is what's going to stay the same. You know, that's Amazon, Jeff Bezos, you know, and his famous letter, he wants to look at what's the same. And when he thinks about growing Amazon, and what is it? Right. Customers always want more choices. Customers right. always want cheaper prices, and the customers always want faster delivery. And that's part of it. So what is it? I'm answering this backwards. What do real estate agents want when they join a team? Probably, you know, one of the things is they want more financial security than going out on their own will give them. So, right. you know, it is hard for most people to go from a stable W-2, even a stable 1099 to you right. eat what you kill and you're right. on an island. You know, luckily, it's all that I know. So I'm just dumb enough to not know any better.
Right.
And, you know, I just find a way to get through it. But that's right. it's hard. You know, a lot of people, that's what gets them. So they right. join for financial stability. Right. So people want to know, how are you going to help me get that? You know, and that's the reason, you know, they say they want leads. You know, even though we know that what they really want is compliant clients, they want training. And then what do clients want? Stability. They want to know that
right.
you're going to help me get the best house at the best price within my time frame. Or they want to know that you're going to sell my house for the most with the least amount of work
right.
in my time frame. And so I think it's just going to require an up level in leadership. Someone could be like, you know what? I don't even have to mention money to my client. I don't even have to get them to sign a buyer rep agreement. I can just get a lead and let them run me around ragged. And when we find a house, I'll write whatever they say and I'll get paid by the seller. Now, you know, you've got to be a conversation up front. Literally, you've got to sign, I'm your buyer agent. And then the question is, can I get out of it? You know, you've got to have that answer. What are you going to do? And then, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't sign that anyway. Coming from my background, I was like, I want people to know up front how I get paid.
Right.
And, you know, I get paid whether the listing agent offers it or not. So to me, right. I mean, it always made sense. But now you've got to have that conversation. So you got to have the rapport, You've got to have the leadership to be able to do that. And then, you know, as you go through, you got to provide that leadership. So I think that's what the client is going to say, you know, am I signing up with you forever? You know, they're going to have those questions. And so the agents that you bring in, are they going to have the ability to be that leader? And right. The leads that you get them, are they going to be able to have that conversation more so than just run around looking at houses? And of course, some teams, the teams that are top notch, that are already training people to get the buyer rep, that are already teaching them, you know, your goals to lead, guide, and protect, those people are set. And so that's what I think is the same. And I wonder, are brokers going to keep trying to recruit as many as people as possible? Or are they going to try to top grade? Where they just bring in certain ones, I think that's going to be fascinating to see.
Yeah. So a couple of key takeaways to me for there. So in terms of, knock on wood, Alex Hormozi, what he talks about for the $100 million offers, do you remember what's the equation that he talks about for the basic idea of creating value? You remember it's like a desired outcome.
Effort,
yeah.
Desired outcome times likelihood of achievement divided by effort and sacrifice and time.
Speed. Yeah, exactly.
And speed.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous that we figured that out together from memory.
Well, I mean, we've probably talked about it a time or two. So the basic idea is at the top, you have all of the good things, right? What do I want to achieve? And minimizing, you want to maximize the power of the picture of the promised land that you're taking people to. That's the desired outcome. The likelihood of success, right? If I'm basically guaranteed that I'm going to succeed, that's drastically better than it's Russian roulette. You might succeed, but you might not, right? Anyway, and then the things that pull away from the strength of your offer are how much work does it take and how long does it take? So if you can get somebody a quick result with a little bit of work that's as close to what they want and as guaranteed as possible, like people will eat that up. That's really what we're optimizing for. So like you mentioned, the chaotic life of being a real estate agent, having answers paints clarity and makes likelihood of success drastically better. And having proven answers that have been tested, that likelihood of success is powerful because it's been done consistently. Having multiple answers to account for the reality of different outcomes is going to be powerful. So if we're trying to walk people through the process of saying, hey, buyers are still going to need to buy houses. And let's be honest, whether or not the buyers realize it, they need you. I'm in the middle of buying a house right now. And oh my word, are buyers agents necessary? It is the most convoluted, crazy process in the world. And is it easy to find a house that somebody might want to buy? Is it easy to look up a home and be like, I want that one? That's super easy. Zillow made that easy. The digital advent of the MLS coming to the internet made that super easy, right? So people have the easy option to find homes. They don't need your help with that. What they do need your help with is, here are the potential obstacles that we're going to run into. Here's the things that I see about this house that would cause problems. Here's why it causes problems with this loan. Here's why it causes problems with it being a good long-term house, or you potentially having to tear the whole thing down because it's structurally unsound and all that. Knowing that stuff and being able to say, person who isn't a professional home renovator, here's the reality of this house and how well does it match your needs, and then navigating the crazy emotional world of dealing with a high cost asset between two parties that want the opposite thing. The seller, they want to sell it, but I want to get as much, and buyer wants it, but wants to get it for as little as possible. Typically that whole crazy emotional roller coaster needs to be navigated. And we might see some people deciding, unfortunately, most likely for them, that maybe I just go and start working direct with the seller. And I think we do see that likely to happen. I think it's going to be to the benefit of the sellers and to the detriment of the buyers.
Because the listing agent has an agreement saying that I'm working with the seller. I'm representing the seller. And it's not the exact same thing, but it's almost like going into a lawsuit and only one person has an attorney. And the attorney is legally obligated to help the other person.
Right.
Like, I can give you advice, but I'm not representing you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one takeaway for me. If you are recruiting, having a clear and obvious strategy for how you help people get listings is going to be big, because representing the seller on this stuff is going to be so much more powerful. From the buy side, I think the other thing that real estate teams need to be looking at having clear answers for is having a suite of options and strategies for how they make sure you get paid. Having a clearer view of the land, of saying, if a buyer commission is offered, here's what that does to, you know, our fees. If it's not offered, here are our strategies for how I can still get paid. And ultimately, you either need to have an answer for if there's no commission offered, but that's the house that they want, and do you have another way to get paid? Do you have solutions for that? And I know you're more familiar with this than I am. I don't think this has been fully settled out yet, where people have the definite, this is the best ways. But what are some of the things that are on the horizon that you've seen as people talking about as potential solutions for that question? And specifically, let's go with, if the commission isn't offered, what are some of the potential solutions that people are envisioning?
Yeah, I'm really lucky to. I had a coach in Atlanta probably 7 years ago that he said, this is coming, and so you need to get a buyer rep agreement, and you need to be able to sell your value, and you should get paid. You shouldn't just get paid what everyone else does or whatever the listing agent. You should get paid your value. And so for a number of years, I often get paid 3.5%. You know, I get paid, you know, even if it's a VA loan and the listing agents, you know, not offered it. That's one of my favorite stories. Have I ever told you that?
I don't think so. Tell it.
This is a really great example. So I had a client moving into town and the Nashville market was crazy hot. This is where I'm humble bragging on myself. I did really good for him. He came into town for the weekend and he had to have a sell home contingency, VA loan. And he was moving from out of state. And I used my diamond in the rough strategy. And there's this one home. I think it's going to be really great. Let's go look at it. Great home. You know, it slipped through the crack. And I got him the sell a home strategy. I got him the sell of home contingency. And I got him, I don't know, it was $8,000 in closing costs. And the listing agent was offering 2.5%. And at that time, on that one, I was getting 3% and a $7.95 broker commission. So we get closer to the closing. And it's a VA loan, and the listing agent was only offering 2.5%. And so with the VA loan, and so this is where it will be interesting to see how this works. In a VA loan, none of the closing costs are allowed to be on the settlement and go to the buyer's agent. So even if the listing agent only offered a dollar, nothing else could come to me, which is mind-blowing to me. So we'd already gotten the closing costs covered, and the client knew about it. You know, we talked about it. I was like, hey, the closing costs cover me. So I just went to the client and said, this isn't allowed to be on here. You were going to be bringing $12,000 to closing. Instead, we're going to take what was going to go to me, put it to you. So now you're going to bring $8,000 to closing, and you're going to cut my company a check for $4,000. Those aren't the right numbers, but let's just say that's what it is. And you know what my client said? Awesome. I mean, because there was no difference in it. That was my leadership, and, you know, I showed him. And so that's one thing, you know, being able to get closing costs to cover it. You know, that's simple. Right. I mean, that's really the best thing. Or, you know, work on, you know, the down payment. I mean, there's so many options. Well, one of the things that my coach said was the special stipulation. He said that their loans used to not cost money, that they just got paid on the servicing. But then they got brokers, and now there's a payment. And so they add the special stipulations. And he said, there's no reason that the closing cost has to go to them. Why can't the closing cost go to you? Why are you fighting so hard for them and getting walked all over? That's what I heard 7 years ago. That just made sense. And one of the questions that's going to be, you know, with a FHA loan, the maximum closing cost is 6%. With conventional, it's 3%. Different loans have different requirements. So it'll be interesting how that affects, because if the closing cost, if your commission's 3%, then there's no other room for closing cost, because up until now, the closing cost did not include your commission. It was the buyer commission and then the closing cost. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. Be interesting to see what happens with the VA. You know, if the VA does not allow you to be paid from closing cost at all, how does that work now? Because the only way you know what the commission is you call. Which, you know, maybe, you know, you get an agreement that down to have communication with your clients, let them, you know, actually earn your value, communicate it, have it in writing, and then this is real estate, you know, figure out a way to make it work. You know, can you roll it into closing costs? Can you roll it into price? You know, it'll be interesting to see all the solutions. Real estate's a pretty good industry at coming up with solutions.
I think that's the key. I think the reality is if I'm a team leader or part of the recruiting process and either in charge of helping with making sure we're equipping our teams and providing a good training or good information, good strategies, if I'm leading the direction where to find that, here's part of what I'd be doing. One, I'd be going through and making notes of those types of stories and saying, what were the strategies that I have previously deployed in areas where the commissions were not clear or great? What did I do that was outside of just the normal accepted way of doing business? And if I don't have examples of that, then I need to start seeking out who has those answers. I need to get involved in networking groups of other agents who are talking about these things that have these solutions. I need to be listening for stories, learning those things. But to me, the clear thing, it's one thing to be ready to adapt. Charlie, you are in leadership in your business. But just like we just said, if you're recruiting people to your team, effectively part of what you likely need to provide is that leadership for them, of giving them clarity through the path. They still need some level of resourcefulness for themselves, sure. But if you could give them the shortcuts, these are the strategies that have worked, we could adapt them depending on your specific circumstances and whatnot as you're going through navigating these deals. But having strategies in mind that you know have in your back pocket and ready to deploy, even if not intending to cover everything, where you try to be as prepared as possible with what you've seen work. One of the things, honestly, to me, this goes back, I think you've mentioned this through some of your training. I've seen this most in just the idea of instructional design, of it becomes incredibly powerful to name things, both for sake of being able to wrap your mind around it, but secondarily being able to sell something. So like you mentioned your diamond in the rough strategy, right? That you gave a set of things that you do a name, and now you can package a lot of ideas with one phrase and communicate a lot with a little. You almost want to be able to do the same thing with how you present. What are our strategies for how we deal with this new problem or new-ish problem of making sure you get paid in a less consistent environment? Name those strategies so that the concept, the strategy is documented. And this to me is, most people are probably missing this. That's one aspect that they're probably missing. They probably aren't naming the strategies. They probably aren't actually trying to document them and collect them. But doing that will make it a lot easier to communicate your value to a potential agent of saying, we've got our six strategies for how you get paid, even if there's no commission. We've got R2, R3, R37, who knows? How many strategies can you put together? And having that in your back pocket will help to communicate, we know how to help you navigate this chaotic environment. We know how to help you succeed. And we have the shortcut process that makes sure that you stay successful in this chaotic environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's good business 101. Create a unique process and name it uniquely so people can't compare apples to oranges. You know, one of the other things that I love that my coach said is people would often ask, what's normal in real estate? I don't know what's normal in real estate. This is how we do it.
Like,
I don't want to be compared. And, you know, that goes into, that's just brilliant marketing, which is what, you know, my coach, that my friend that's a coach that gets paid $100,000 to meet with you four times a year and you get a cell phone. That's what he's done. You know, he's built expertise, niche, and people are like, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah, I love that. One of the other kind of branch of this subject is, I think there's three likely business model buckets that come out of this that I've seen. I've been researching from a lot of different people, getting a lot of people's different takes. And what stood out to me, I forget who I heard this from, but the basic concept I heard from somebody. I might have even shared the post with you, so you might remember who I'm talking about. I don't remember off the top of my head who voiced this idea. But I see three major business models coming out of this. I think people offering like a suite of flat fee services or a la carte services saying, if you want my help with this, here's what it costs. And so that's a way of structuring it where people are like, you know, I would like your help with negotiation, but I'll find the home that I want. And then maybe I pay you per review of a property or something. I don't know. I'm literally just pulling ideas out of my butt there. But a suite of services and just having the costs for them. That's one potential model. Another model is specialized services. So there's two examples that come to mind for me. One of which is one that I think consumers would be very familiar with. So it could be actually leveraged as a marketing opportunity for how you say, here's what I do, or here's how to think about this. I don't know. But have you ever seen the show Property Brothers?
I've seen it. Okay. I haven't watched it a lot.
So I think that show is actually a pretty good example of what I would call a highly specialized business model. I'm sure it's the Property Brothers show specifically. It's definitely those brothers. I forget, maybe it's not that show that they do this. But the basic model of the show is you want a house, you want it in this area. Our basic premise is that we're going to help you find a home that needs repairs and needs remodeling. But once it's remodeled, you're going to get exactly the home that you want in the area that you want it at a price that feels good. And that's going to be better than just buying something that's already at that higher price range. That's their basic premise. And so they bring a combination of services that aren't all typically the standard real estate transaction. They're helping you find the home, but that's right. Not where they stop. They're also helping repair, remodel, design. So they're bringing a whole suite of, you have a bigger problem that we're helping you solve. We help you solve it in this more complete way. So it's a specialized thing. That's the one that I think most people would be, you know, potentially familiar with. The other one that comes to mind is you. And you have a very specific way of helping people where you strategically go after people who are looking to move within the same area. So they've got a home that they need to sell and they're looking to buy again in the same area. And so you've developed strategies around that specific type of person that brings together the things that they need in order to achieve that. You want to just, at a high level, walk through the specialization aspects of that?
They may say there's nothing new there. And that's kind of power of marketing and packaging. Right. The fact that I've called it my move up plan or my move up down or move down plan. And it's really simple. I find out whether they want to move first. And the truth is, most people that I'm working with, they move because they want to. And so often they say, I don't want to just settle on a home. I want to find a great home for me. So I set them up, and usually what we'll do is we'll get like a line of credit or a bridge loan, or we'll do something and get everything set up there, and we'll come up with a listing plan that does not go into effect. We get everything set up, and then we're like, all right, now we're going to look for your home. And we could find it in 3 weeks. We could find it in 9 months. We leave it open-ended. Part of what I do, too, is if there's a bunch of them, I'll preview the homes during the day, because pictures lie. And, you know, out of 10, there's 3 good ones. And then I say, look, here's 3 that we're going to go look at. And then they buy that home with the line of credit or the bridge loan. As they move out, then we enact the listing plan. In fact, I'm doing it in 2 weeks. The couple are moving down to Huntsville. The painters are in there this week. And then, you know, we're going to enact our plan. And, you know, we get it staged. And we do everything because that's what they love. It's so much easier. And so no one has heard that. And then I actually label the bridge loan. I've labeled it. I've created my own name. It's called the double down loan because they put 5% down up front. And then when they sell their house, they put the rest of their loan on it and it recalculates. And I do that for one reason. No one can compare me apples to apples. Also, if someone Googles any term, there's going to be people on Reddit that are just crapping on it. You know, there's going to be the pros and cons. They're going to get all wonky. And so, you know, it depends. Like the double down loan's not right for everybody. I've got some clients that it won't work for. So, you know, I've got lots of strategies because I've just thought about this now for close to 7 years.
The key thing that stands out to me is that you are able to specialize because you know who you are serving. You've picked kind of a specific segment that not everybody's situation is exactly the same, but when you're dealing with very similar people, their situations are very similar. And so that specialization allows you to have more of a suite of services and plans that are specifically tailored to help that person do what they need to. And so you gain a fuller understanding of the overall picture of what's possible and whatnot. So I think that to me is one of those areas where very clearly specializing, looking at who do you know how to help that you could help consistently, and getting good marketing going out that talks about how you help people with that. Which, by the way, if you want good marketing that goes out, that talks about what you specialize in, Referrals While You Sleep is a great option to check out because it does that for you on autopilot. It makes it really easy. ReferralsWhileYouSleep.com, or check them out at realestategrowthhackers.com/RWYS. I had to think through the first letters in my head. But that's Charlie's company that helps real estate agents with marketing. If you're a lender looking for help similarly, then Realtor Waiting List is what you want to check out. RealtorWaitingList.com. But anyway, where was I? Sorry, I got too busy pitching your awesome service.
Thank you. That was very nice. We're talking about having niche services and naming them and, perfect, you know, being able to stand out from the crowd.
So we've talked about like flat fee a la carte services. We've talked about niche down narrow services. Honestly, I don't even know if I'd call the third one. So look at it this way. The third one to me is just this idea of there's always a market for people who are willing to pay a ton to get everything, to get all the help in the world. You know, you're arranging their cars and you're arranging the remodeling for them and you're making sure that there's champagne at the showing. And essentially what I would call, like, they are the same people who will consistently pay for first class and will pay to be able to go to, you know, the airport lounge because it's more convenient. It's one of those things, that end of the market, the luxury end of the market, is willing to pay comparatively more for things that they aren't zero work, but they're outside of maybe the realm of traditional real estate. And that would be the other model that I would say is just that luxury. You care about the really small details that are just about convenience. And I think there's the reason why I'm a little bit hesitant about even calling it a third model is there's elements of that in what you do when you specialize. But the specialization, right, is more about being very clear about what actually matters or not. I think what I would say potentially goes to that luxury end is that end of what you're willing to include in what matters is fairly wide. And they pay for it, but you've got to be ready to provide for it, right? You've got to be resourceful enough, right, to provide for those needs. And it's not necessarily a massive segment of the market, but it's a comparatively profitable segment for those that I think are ready to narrow in on it. I don't, does that make sense? Do you think that's a fair take of where some of those different zones go?
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, it reminds me, value and money is so, you know, it's elastic. That's what Dan Kennedy always talks about. And, you know, I've got clients that we've sold houses to Open Door and OfferPad. And sometimes just for that convenience, you know, I had a client, house was worth $340, and they decided to sell their house for $280 and pay, I think, 8% service fee and then, right, repair costs. That they were okay doing, right, all that because of where they were, you know. And I've got, right, friends, you know, I've got one friend, he said, I sold to some wholesaler, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I could have sold your house and got you 20% more. But for him, it was the easiest thing. He didn't even care that he gave up $40,000.
Exactly. So I think that's the big change that's happening to me. There was previously a standard floor of what was expected to some degree of what you could expect. You know, if you've got any given listing, it's kind of a floor of what you could expect that commission is going to look like on the other end. Now that floor has essentially been potentially pulled away. And so if it's been pulled away, what do the options look like that there's more variety? And because of that, I think the key idea is that everyone could be everything to all people. That was never a great strategy, but I think a lot of people were able to, right, potentially skate by on this floor of commissions available that I don't know how many people will be able to succeed doing that. I think a lot of we can do anything is potentially going to go to the two extremes of we could do anything, but you pay per piece, or we could do anything and you pay a lot for the convenience. And then in the middle, we specialize in a very clear, specific either set of use cases or in a specific use case. And I don't see that generalist model. I think it gets even harder to be successful with that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, we're moving to specialization. The do everything people, they don't get paid a lot. And it's because they're a generalist and they're a commodity. Right. And so you're going to have to, it's your responsibility to uncommoditize yourself.
Right.
And the cool, right, thing is there's plenty of resources on how to do that. Whether it's, yep, our favorite Mike Michalowicz, Get Different, yep, and Pumpkin Plan. That's what he talked about. You know, he was in IT. And IT is commoditized, but he niched into hedge funds. So I think it's got the ability to open up a ton of value.
And for sake of real estate teams looking to recruit, I think there's a few different models that you could play at here. I think you can try and recruit to fill specific use cases maybe in your business where you have your go-to person for a specific use case. So maybe you build out a well-rounded team that goes after different use cases. It could be that you get really good at helping people zero in and find their strategic place to emphasize. It could be that you build out a model where you get lots of opportunities and you process them through a combination of flat fee services versus specialized, maybe even luxury. Maybe you have that full suite of things that you offer and you have different people on your team that are geared, you know, more one way or another. I think to me, if I had to say what would be the most consistently successful, it's probably going to be getting really good at helping people to find their unique area to serve, being able to teach them how to productize and decommoditize themselves to have a consistent specialized opportunity. So learning how to do that, learning what that looks like and how to spin the same work of real estate in these specialized ways. I think yours is a great example. It's not that everything comes completely different. It's not like you were doing real estate, but now you need to learn how to resole shoes. It's not that. It's you're still doing the same work, but you know, the specific angles, problems that people run into, that you're specializing in that way. And you're figuring out who is the person that consistently runs into these problems that you can speak to them effectively and show how you are a clear path to success for them. So I think getting really good at being able to say, like, voice that, being able to say, here's one of the challenges that you're going to run into in the real estate industry. Here's how we help you through it. Or being able to recognize when people have that done really well and being able to say, here's how we help support and make that easier. Those sorts of things. And those are guesses. We're still figuring out what all that looks like. But those are some of the things that come top of mind to me in terms of what's coming. First off, do you agree, disagree with that assessment? Do you think I'm off anywhere on that?
I think you're right. You know, it's basic business, knowing your customer, you know, and, you know, what does the agent usually want? The agent usually wants financial stability or a high top end, maybe both.
Right.
And so how can you provide one or both of those to people? And if you can do that and make a profit, you're going to have a lot of people want to work with you.
Yeah, I agree. That makes sense. If you had to give a guess, so we've got these regulations coming out. I don't know the technical terms for it. July 2024 is when at least the first aspects of this, if not all the aspects, I forget the specifics, are coming out. Given that's the start of when the official transition happens, I mean, given we're in a transition now because we know it's coming, so people are going to start adapting in the ways that they can now to whatever degree, and then it's officially acceptable come July, and then what do you think the next few months, next few years, what do you imagine in terms of timelines around these things being impactful and when people need to be prepared for them? If you had to guess.
You know, I think just we don't have practically, I think some things are going to happen quick. One of the first questions is, how are listing agents going to handle the commission question? Because if you've got a hot listing, you don't want to answer 500 calls of, are you offering a commission? So are they going to put it on a document and upload it to the MLS? Is that allowed? Right. Are they going to put it on another public portal like Zillow? You know, so that's going to be fascinating. How are they going to solve things to make things smoother for them? And, you know, real estate, like I said, we adapt really quick. I remember when the market was hot, there's not a whole lot of new things, and there's lots of other industries that talk about that are similar. And one of the things I love about the real estate industry, we do have some of the most brilliant minds in the world in this industry and, you know, the top 10% in anything. And so, you know, I remember when the market was hot, you know, we got escalation clauses, we got, you know, dropping in contingencies. We found all, you know, we had businesses offering to buy the house cash and then you pay them back. All of these things popped up. So I think we're going to have some solutions pretty quick. And I think a lot of it's going to be, how's the listing agent going to handle? I mean, I've got to call or text you to find the commission. And then how are the MLSs going to respond? Because that's really fascinating. You know, we've got, I think there are thousands, I know hundreds of MLSs. And some are big, some of them are small. It'll be interesting to see that. So, you know, I think that there is this path of least resistance. And the terrain just changed. And we're going to find, I mean, humans find the path of least resistance. And we got a lot of us. So I think a lot of stuff will happen quickly. We got a lot of good big companies around. We got some small companies that have smart people. And I do think it creates the opportunity for great value. But you're going to have to up your game.
Yeah, I think to me, it's one of those things of definitely start having a plan of how you're helping make sure that your agents can still get paid no matter what happens. It's one of those areas we don't necessarily want to spend infinite time on this, but you do want to have plans and strategies for here are starting paths and how I would go down tracking down solutions, and know that you really, I think that's a skill set. That's the skill set of being ready to build the parachute on the way down and figure it out as you're going, because that's going to be necessary, I think, because we don't know exactly what it's going to look like until we get there. But having some ideas for that is going to matter. And then on the other end, having potential solutions of maybe you're checking in with legal counsel and saying, if I put this note in the MLS that says check this website for information on listing and potential things, not going to get me in trouble, but have some sort of solution where you are. You're trying to optimize to make sure that you can convey answers to questions quickly, that you can do it easily, that you can do it with the least hassles for yourself, because it'd be really easy to set up a Google spreadsheet that has the name of the listing and basic details and the commission. If you got a bunch of listings and you're doing that, then you share it out to people that are asking, and there you go, right? But checking in on the legalities and of all of that is going to be the thing that you can potentially do in advance. But I think, just like you mentioned, going through the typical process and asking, you know, I like that example of when people ask this question. Again, you can't assume that people are not aware of this, that the information for this was just announced on, you know, the New York Times, and it was the front page news for everything. My mom sent me a link to an article about it that
people have thoughts and opinions about it.
Exactly. So you have to imagine that the consumers are going to be asking about this, so you have to be prepared for the questions, for the objections, and as, you know, teams recruiting, you need to be able to equip your agents for that, have clear guidance. Here's how we solve this, here's how we're dealing with this, etc. And honestly, the more proactive you could be about having those answers, now is the time to say, here's what we're doing to prepare, here's what we're doing. I would be doing virtual trainings, in-person trainings. I'd be doing stuff to say, we are leading, we have answers, we're putting together answers, and start showing that you have that so that you can attract the people who need that help, because that's really what's going to be setting you apart. But yeah, any other final thoughts, closing thoughts around how this NAR settlement impacts, you know, real estate teams and recruiting?
Go make money. Now's the time.
There we go. Just like always, there's never a dull day in the world of real estate. I think the reality is, as soon as real estate professionals get used to something, it all changes anyway. You know, if you're not used to it yet, here's your lesson again, right? So there we go. All right, cool. Yeah. Well, thanks so much. This has been, I'm Zach Haber with Charlie Madison. It's been another great episode of the Real Estate Growth Hacker Show. Until next time, we'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Real Estate Growth Hacker Show. Remember, done is better than perfect. To turn the marketing ideas and tactics you just learned into real growth for your real estate business, visit us at realestategrowthhackers.com. If you like this episode, consider sharing it with another real estate professional who could benefit from the information. Or maybe you'd like to subscribe to the show to never miss an episode. You can leave a rating or review on iTunes with your biggest takeaway, helping this show to reach and help more people just like you. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode.